Today's homily comes with a different conclusion, usually not heard on Thanksgiving Day. Moses said, "The Lord your God is bringing you into a good land with flowing streams. Take care that you do not forget the Lord your God." That dream was possibly in the hearts of the pilgrims as they set sail for the New World. But it turned out to be more complicated than that. My first parish, St. Gabriel's in Marion, Massachusetts, serving Marion, Mattapoisett, and Rochester, was initial part of the Plymouth Plantation, and some descendants were parishioners, Bradfords, Brewsters, and Aldens. Minister's Rock, in the woods outside Marion Village, was a large boulder on which elders from the plantation preached to Wampanoag Indians. The town of Plymouth, 40 miles north of Marion, is a combination of history and myth. Plymouth Rock is disappointingly small, but the story of Plymouth looms large. You see, separatists from the Church of England, illegal, met and worshipped in secret. After many punishments and jailings, a group fled to Holland, where sympathetic merchants, the London Adventure, bought a 60-ton passenger ship, the Speedwell, and the smaller Mayflower, and sailed from Holland to England on August 15, 1620, to gather more separatists to begin a new life in America. When the Speedwell proved unseaworthy, they returned to England, loaded all 102 passengers onto the Mayflower, and with a crew of 37, set sail for Plymouth, England, on 21st of September. Rough seas and storms prevented them from reaching the tract of land they'd been granted around Hudson Bay. After a grueling 66-day trip, the Mayflower landed at the tip of Cape Cod, now Provincetown, in late November. The day after Christmas, the Mayflower deposited its passengers onto the shore of Plymouth, only one man having died on the voyage when he fell overboard going up to smoke his pipe. And I always knew smoking was bad for you. But one child was born, keeping the group at 102. Before going ashore, pilgrim leaders, including Bradford and Brewster, drafted, as you know, the Mayflower Compact, a 200-word document demanded by hired tradesmen who rejected proselytizing by religious leaders. The first framework of government written and enacted in what would become the United States of America. Imagine, 102 people, mostly adults, below deck in a cargo hold of a ship not meant for passengers, in a space 24 feet by 90 feet, 4 feet high, sitting around, impossible to stand, wearing the same underwear and clothes for 66 days, no privacy, simplest food and drink, sewage passed by bucket through portholes on the side. Imagine, 24 by 90 by 4. Yet, no one got sick. How could that be? In the 1950s, two men working on a two-thirds replica you can still see at Plymouth were curious. How did no sickness occur? Pouring through original records of the Mayflower, still in Holland, it suddenly became clear. A merchant ship, its primary cargo all those years, wine. barrels of wine, leaking, evaporating, had permeated the wood below deck, making the entire space antiseptic. But it was tough. The pilgrims were city folks. And by the time they landed, after all the delays, it was too late to plant crops or build shelters. Many died of malnutrition, scurvy, and freezing cold. Only 44 survived that first year. Their salvation? A local Indian, Squanto, who had been kidnapped and taken to England a decade before, served as an interpreter with the Wampanoags, who introduced them to corn, taught them to fertilize vegetables with dried fish. That resulted in a bumper crop. By autumn 1621, the pilgrims had a lot to be thankful for. Remember a pilgrim's diary that we often read at the July 4th service? The winter past had been a bitter one, beyond memory of any of our group. The death of many of this band had disheartened our spirits and weakened our wills, our bodies too, suffering from myriad deficiencies. However, moved by a spirit beyond their understanding or ours, the natives taught us new ways of growing and preserving food. And after a more pleasant summer, we found ourselves facing approaching winter on the heels of a good crop. Our harvest gotten in, our governor sent 4 men on fowling that we might have a special manner rejoice together. So after the harvest, Chief Massasoit and about 90 other natives joined the pilgrims for the English tradition of the harvest festival, celebrating for several days, dining on venison, goose, duck, turkey, fish, lobster, and a couple of new foods, cranberries and cornbread. On the way to Jerusalem, Jesus traveled along the border between Samaria and Galilee. As he entered one of the villages, 10 lepers came to meet him. Standing some way off, they called to him, "Jesus, Master, take pity on us." Jesus healed them, but only one returned to thank him, a Samaritan. A disrespected tribe, much like Squanto and the Wampanoags. They had helped the pilgrims survive, but like the Samaritan, were not respected. The descendants of those pilgrims denigrated the natives, took their land, tried to annihilate the very people who had greeted them in peace and saved their lives. Thanksgiving is not a sweet Hallmark card day. For American Indians, it is a day of mourning. The only treaty Indians ever knew with our nation was a broken one. Records show that even George Washington wiped out Indian villages and confiscated their land. By heritage, I am a Cherokee. My grandmother's mother forced off her land in Georgia, relocated, they called it, in Indian Territory, Oklahoma. In a kind of modern parallel, America helped establish Israel. So Palestinians have their Nakba, the catastrophe in 1948, when they were forced off their land, experiencing occupation, repression, and death ever since. I have seen it. On October 7, Hamas launched a brutal, deadly attack. massacring 1,200 Israeli civilians, 240 taken hostage. Gratitude that 50 may be released in exchange for 150 women and teens from Israeli prisons. Hopefully more to come. This morning, a friend sent me a video of 40 Broadway musicians singing from Les Miserables, "Bring Him Home," except they changed it to "Bring Them Home." It just about wiped me out. But this is what I've been struggling with, losing sleep over. What to say in light of today's gospel? Because in response to the attack by Hamas, Israel continues to withhold food and water, electricity, medicine, and fuel from innocent civilians in this largest open-air prison in the world. Bombing Gaza into rubble, making 40% of the 2.5 million people homeless, 20,000 wounded, killing more than 14,000 Palestinians, including 5,000 children, more than 1,200 kids missing or under the rubble, many more maimed mentally and physically. It's a stain on our soul that this destruction in Gaza is happening with American compliance. Aircraft and bombs, weapons, ammunition, paid for by our tax dollars. Years ago at the Ali Arab Hospital in Gaza, I saw exploded shells imprinted "Made in America." But you know, we Americans really are a good people, sending many truckloads of food and water, medical supplies and fuel into Gaza from Egypt, supporting civilians and hospitals there, pressuring the Israelis. As I was typing these words, the song "To Dream the Impossible Dream" was playing. And I must confess, it brought tears. And the hope that in spite of everything, we can return to give thanks. And in the spirit of that Samaritan leper, feel gratitude even in our brokenness, and be motivated to work harder for peace with justice at home and around the world on Thanksgiving Day.